Oh, makes sense. I'll get it the 20th time I have to do it. I'm very uptight today. Alex and Drew probably felt like tension being around me. And I'm being serious. I'm not joking. I'm extremely nervous today. I'm not sure how this is all going to come out today. I've been nervous about this ever since Adam was telling me about this series and that I had the great task of delivering this lesson. So I don't know what my emotions will be, so I'm telling you that up front. This might be a little bit uncomfortable. I may just have to stop after 5 minutes. And that's, that is an unusual thing for me. We'll see where this goes. I'm going to start this off in the same way that Adam started off last week whenever he was talking about parenting. In so many ways, I want to emulate you, so I'm going to today. Last week, Adam said, being a parent is hard. Being single is hard. Being single is hard. And, sorry. And I think part of that is because, usually, I would venture to guess the vast majority of people who are single, that's not the way that you envisioned your life going. That's not the plan that you expected to have. And especially for somebody that is a widow or a widower, I can't imagine, for them, how difficult that must be. Being a person that's never been married, it's difficult. But being a formerly married person, I'm sure that's difficult as well. And let me say this too, by the way. I don't have any notes, so we're just going to talk from the hip today. Understand that being single, people that are single, we are not a monolith. That's a term they use in politics a lot. Not all Republicans or Democrats are alike. Well, not all single people are alike. Some, as I said earlier, have never been married. Some have been married before. There are some who are widows, widowers. There are some who are divorcees. There are some who are single at age 20, early in their life and in their 30s. There are some who are single at midlife, some in the twilight of their life. There are some who for the last 50 years have not been single, but all of a sudden are now. That's a difficult proposition. And that's what we have to talk about today. Thank you, Adam. And so, in thinking about that, single people have so many different emotions that run through their mind. You're sad sometimes. Sometimes you're jealous. Sometimes you're desperate. Sometimes you feel abandoned. Sometimes you feel lonely. Those are just all some of the emotions that I have felt. I'm talking about me, and there's probably others that other people could add to that list. But those are some of the emotions that people who are single have to deal with. And it doesn't help whenever, and Blake, I'm not necessarily talking about you, but it doesn't necessarily help when somebody asks you to come to their wedding and to officiate it especially. I have been at weddings that I have officiated or been the best man at a wedding. You know who I'm talking about there. And I've been jealous and been somewhat upset and frustrated and angry. And you're dealing with all of those emotions, and that's a hard proposition. But it is what it is. It doesn't help when we live in a society where there's a negative connotation to being single. There just is. To the credit of these elders, and I'm not saying this because, in a sense, they're my boss, But it's the truth. John Miller doesn't mince words, do you? You tell it like it is. And I remember, a lot of you know, most of you know, that I had a hard time accepting this job about maybe 14 months ago. I had a hard time accepting this job. And one of the things that we talked about was that I'm single. And John just looked at me whenever I said that. I thought I had them with that. I thought I had my way out. And John just looked at me and goes, Leo, we knew you were single when we offered you the job. That's just how John is, right? I didn't have an answer for that. But it is the truth. Like I am not in preaching circles like Adam is. I'm just not. Like, I'm not in that world every day. I'm over at school a lot. But, like, I know enough preachers and enough people to know that there are some elderships that have purposely not hired a preacher because he's not married. That's the negative connotation that I'm talking about. Like, you have a preacher who is well qualified. I even have a friend who was told, we went in another direction for this position because you were not married. Although, we think you're a better preacher than the guy we hired. Now think about, like, some people are laughing. That upsets me. Like that, but that is what we deal with. Oh, and then don't go to Freed Hardeman. There, I know of a couple of people, your parents, Adam, who made me, sold me a bill of goods or whatever it's called, because, like, I'm thinking I'm going to go to Freed Hardeman and automatically get married there. And that's kind of the impression that they give when you get down there. My first day at chapel. This probably explains why I started skipping chapel. My first day at chapel, Milton Sewell gets up. He was the president then. Gets up and says, look to your right and look to your left. You're probably sitting next to your future wife. And I'm sitting in between two guys. And so I'm thinking, what in the world's going on here? But that is the impression that you get. Like, you can go to Freed Hardeman for 4 years, or for some of you, maybe seven. But you can go for 4 years, graduate summa cum laude, and still feel unaccomplished because you're not married. That's the society that we live in. You know, so much of our society, by the way, is structured around couples. You go to a restaurant, and there's a booth there. That booth is there for intimate seating, usually for you and a person sitting across from you, right? Our society is structured around couples. It seems like you get a little bit more relief on your taxes whenever you're a couple. Our society is structured around being a couple. Like, somebody actually told me, somebody that I love to death, had this conversation with me. Like, we had this interaction one time where I was saying that I was going to go to the movies. Well, who are you going to go to the movies with? By myself was my answer. You're going to do that? What kind of fool does that? That is the mindset that you deal with whenever you're single. People look at you like it's a disease or something. And you're already dealing with how you inwardly feel about that. And then other people impress upon you their feelings. Not easy. Even in the Bible. You remember going back to Genesis chapter 2, verse 18? God tells Adam, it's not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable for him, with him. And so, like, we see there that even then, we're not meant to be alone. But some of us deal with that. There's all sorts of derogatory comments that are made about people that are single. Oh, that's just an old maid. You know, she has never been married, and she's past the age of getting married now. She's just an old maid. And sometimes those comments like that, always a bridesmaid, never a bride. Sometimes we hear comments like that, and they are not intentionally meant to be hurtful, but they are. And I've got to be cognizant of the way that my speech and my actions are making somebody else feel. Jesus made that point, didn't he, in Matthew chapter 12, verse 36. He says there, for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it on the day of judgment. And then in verse 37, actually, which I don't know if I put that on the screen at all, but in verse 37, the point is made that by your words you will be condemned, or by your words you'll be justified. So we've got to be aware of how sometimes we say tactless things toward people, and not just people that are single, but in any walk of life. We have this negative connotation with somebody that is being single. You know, there are some people in here even, and I'm not trying to be critical, but here's the point at which I might say something that might offend, and I'm not trying to, but we have some, I'm going to look down at the ground so nobody thinks I'm talking about them, but we have some people in here where the only thing you talk to me about is the fact that I'm single. Not, Leo, how's your job going? Leo, how's your, like, every conversation is about that. One time somebody even said, do you feel bad about being single? I wanted to tell her, only when somebody brings it up. But that is what we're dealing with. There's this negative vibe about being single. So that confuses me then, that we get to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, turn your Bibles there, and then there, looking at verse 8, I'm confused because we live in a society where marriage is what it's all about. We will have breaking news coverage for a royal wedding for people that are not even from this country. Now, some of you get mad about the news being called Local 6, and here we go talking about people getting married in a foreign country. Our whole society is wrapped around marriage. Why is that the case? And then we look over in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, and it seems like Paul maybe has a different impression about marriage. Look there with me at 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 8. I believe it's on the screen. But I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. Jump down to verse 38. So then, the end of the chapter, so then, he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. A wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives, but if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. But, you guys know how I feel about these conjunctions, but look at verse 40. She is happier if she remains as she is, according to my judgment. And I think I also have the Spirit of God. So which is it? Like, our world is so caught up in you know, propelling marriage. And then we have Paul here saying, I wish people would remain as I am. I wish they wouldn't be married. What gives there? Isn't that interesting that Paul lived in that time, and that was his mindset? And by the way, I meant to say this earlier. Adam has done a great job in this series, the four lessons that he's preached, at making this about everybody. And it's difficult sometimes with some of the topics that we have, because some of you are sitting there rolling your eyes at me. Oh, this isn't about me. Well, no, hopefully there will be some practical points for you at the end if you are married, so that you can maybe minister or encourage someone who is single. So this is for everybody. This is for all of us. And you want to know why it's also for everybody, and I'm not trying to be insensitive whenever I say this, but it's for everybody because just as much as you are married, you could be single one day. And then what? And so we look here in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. Why does Paul seem to be so much against marriage? Is he against marriage? I want you to consider 2 points. First off, this wasn't a conversation that Paul started. So if I want to say, oh, Paul had an axe to grind against marriage, no, that's not what it was. Because if you look at verse 1 there, Paul starts that out by saying, now concerning the things of which you wrote. They wrote to him first. Sometimes you ask things you don't want the answer to, maybe. They opened their mouth first, if you will. And so now Paul is talking about this. So no, don't think necessarily that Paul necessarily had an agenda or an axe to grind, like I said a minute ago. They started this out. Now, a point could be made that you could argue, perhaps, that Paul did maybe shift the conversation over to marriage. Because originally, this whole thing was about sexual immorality. Go back to chapter 6 and look at verses 12 and 13. And I don't want to get too wonky here with all of this. I'll save that for people that know the Bible better than me, like Jim and Adam and Drew. But just consider this for a second. Because, you know, some people will have you turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and say, Paul was against marriage. Chapter 6, verse 12. All things are lawful for me, but all things are not helpful. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. Verse 13. Foods for the stomach and the stomach for food, but God will destroy both it and them. Now the body is not for sexual immorality, but for the Lord, and the Lord for the body. Some of these Corinthians, here's why, like I said, I don't want to get like too deep into this, but some of these Corinthians were of the mindset that food is a natural thing that we desire and that we crave. And also, and I understand that we have some kids in here, so I'm trying to be very sensitive with this, but people say food is something that we have to have, and also sex is something that we have to have. And so since one of those things is okay for me to indulge in, why can't I also just indulge in sex? That's kind of the whole mindset there. But we've got to understand that, as it's saying there in verse 12, not all things are lawful for me. Yes, sure, it is true. Paul agreed in part of that. Yes, it's true that you got to have food. But even with food, I've got to have some kind of restraint with that. I can't be gluttonous. God allows for us to be fulfilled in the things that we desire and the things that we need. And in one such way there, in thinking about sex, it is within the confines of a marriage. That is the restraint there. Just like there is a restraint with food. There's a certain level that I can't get past with eating too much food, for instance. All right, so I have the same mindset here. So then Paul throws out this opening salvo, if you will, at the beginning of chapter 7, verse 1, whenever he's saying, like, a man should not touch a woman. Listen, that is just a euphemism for sex. It is. All right? And so you have these two schools of thought. All things are not lawful for me. We have there in chapter 6, verse 12. That's for people that are arguing sexual indulgence. And then we also have this other school of thought here in verse 1 that comes across as sexual abstinence. I shouldn't touch a woman. And so Paul goes on to clarify that. Because see, if we're going to criticize Paul and say that Paul is against marriage, we need to let Paul clarify his own comments, because he does. Look with me there in chapter 7 at verse 2. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 2. I just need to keep my Bible open. I'm sorry. Nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife, and let each woman have her own husband. Let the husband render to his wife the affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. And so we see there that in a marriage, it is approved to have like sex. And so like this whole school of thought here that, you know, we can't indulge in sex or something is not fully true. Paul shows there that within a marriage, yes, it's okay. But then also you have that other school of thought. We've got to completely abstain from having sex. Well, it seems like Paul argues and discourages that in verse 5. Look at verse 5. Do not deprive, this is talking about spouses, do not deprive one another except for consent for a time, that you may give yourselves to fasting and prayer, and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So see there, the whole argument about abstaining from sex, where do you find authority for that within the confines of a marriage? And so Paul kind of wraps this up with a neat little bow in verses 8 and 9, if you will, where he says, "But I say to the unmarried," which we've read already, "and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. But," there's the word again, "but if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry." Does that sound like a person that is against marriage? He says, let them marry. How much clearer does it get than that? Let them marry. So what Paul is saying here is, I think, in my opinion, it would be better if you didn't marry. But if you're going to burn in passion, as it goes on to say later on in that verse, be married and then burn in passion with just that one person. But we can even keep going. And I'm going to have to pick up the pace here a little bit. If you look down at verse 25, Paul here at verse 25 says, "Now concerning virgins, I have no commandment from the..." Well, that's interesting. "I have no commandment from the Lord." And so now some people probably already thought, "Oh, well, that's uninspired then. He's given his opinion." Well, wait a second. "I have no commandment from the Lord, yet I give judgment as one of whom the Lord in his mercy has made trustworthy." He even says at the end of the chapter in verse 40 that, like, "I think that I have the Spirit of God," he says. And so, like, no, don't close your ears to this and say, "Oh, well, Paul is just giving his opinion." But let's see what that opinion is. "I suppose," verse 26, "therefore, that this is good because of the present distress, that it is good for a man to remain as he is," unmarried, basically, "or if he is married, to stay married." And he goes on to explain that in verse 27. "Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be loosed. Are you loosed from a wife? Do not seek a wife. Remain as you are, married or unmarried," he's saying. And then verse 28, "But even if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned." And so we see there that even there in that verse, Paul is saying, even if you choose to get married, you have not sinned. Some of you should be breathing a sigh of relief because a lot of you in here are married. And so, like this whole, like, I want to clear up, if there is any confusion from this point forward, that Paul was not against marriage. I've shown you a couple of places there. Now, Paul does give three reasons that I'm just going to share with you because my time is escaping from me. Three reasons that I just want to give you quickly for why he was telling these people in Corinth to not get married. And these all start with the letter D. I was able to make these all start. That's something that you normally do, alliteration. So I feel good about myself. But first off, look at verse 26. Paul mentions there's something about this present distress. We've already read that, present distress. Now listen, I'm not an English teacher. I understand that, but I understand enough about that. I hope this is true. That the word present is an adjective. That modifies distress, right? Okay, so present is talking about the situation that we're in now. One of the great things that I respect about Adam with Teens in the Word is that he makes sure that we understand that whenever I'm reading the Bible, I've got to read it for what it was meant to those people then. And then I've got to take a step back and think, okay, now what does it mean to me? When this is talking about present distress, from everybody that I've looked at and read about and, you know, talked to Drew and stuff that knows Greek, that is talking about specific situations and distress that was, like, specific to the Corinthian culture and their circumstances. And so I'm not sure that we can make generalizations for us now, 2,000 years later, and say, oh, well, it's just a distress and you shouldn't get married and blah, blah, blah. But there is a point to be made there. Just consider Paul for a second and this distress, because he doesn't say what it is, so I've got to speculate a little bit here. But, you know, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, where Paul, and picking up about verse 24, where Paul there is talking about some of the sufferings he's dealt with five times from the Jews. "I've received 40 minus one stripes, and I was shipwrecked three times, and I was in perils in the land, in perils of the sea," and all these things. I wonder, whenever Paul was talking about all of those agonizing moments that he was going through, I wonder if he were married, what kind of agony that would put on his wife. You see, sometimes whenever I'm married and I am facing ridicule of some sort, that also puts undue agony on my family. So I wonder if part of what Paul was saying there about this present distress was that. Like, we can look all throughout 1 Corinthians and see that they had turmoil from within and opposition from without. They had all kinds of issues going on in that church. That could have been the distress that he's talking about. But that's one thing that he mentions here for why he thinks they should remain unmarried. But also, he mentions distractions. Look at picking up at verse 32 there in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. In verse 32, Paul makes this point. But I want you to be without care. He who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about things of the world and how he may please his wife. Whenever we see the word world in the Bible, it's easy to think of that as the evil influences that permeate the world, right? But also the world could describe people that are in it. And so the point here that Paul is trying to make is that sometimes my spouse can be a distraction in me serving the Lord. And so here's a tip for those of us who are single. That's why we ought to try to find spouses who are Christians, because they can help us stay focused on the Lord. Because some people marry people who are not Christians, and then they're having to satisfy two different things. You know, I understand that, by the way, because I've got two different jobs or careers, if you will. There are some times where I am at school, and I hope my principal's not watching this. Well, I hope they are watching it. But there are some times where I'm at school, and I'm doing church stuff. And I'm like, hey, kids, don't bother me unless you're bleeding or something. But like, I'm trying to like focus on school stuff. Like, it's hard to handle both, right? And that's kind of the idea here about these distractions. Whenever I am like married, if I'm going to do that well, if I'm going to like do marriage well and respect it with the way that God wants me to respect it, I'm going to have to pay some attention to that spouse. And that could in turn be a distraction, if I allow it to be, from the Lord. How many people do you know married an unchristian and now they're not faithful? I mean, think about it. And not only that, but let me make a point very clear that single people can also have diversions and distractions as well. All right, so like, I'm not trying to make the point that only married people can be distracted. No, I'm not, because I can be distracted by watching sports. I can be distracted by going to the gym. I can be distracted by endless blog writing. I can be distracted by surveying social media. I can be distracted by conquering the last game. I mentioned five things there that I'm distracted by as a single person. Now, all of those things, by the way, could be used to glorify God, or they can be used as a dangerous distraction from God. And if they're a dangerous distraction from God, I need to put down the smartphone, I need to put down the remote control, I need to put down the computer, and I need to put my focus on God, whether I'm single or whether I'm married. We're in 1 Corinthians. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31, doesn't Paul say there, therefore, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God? All of those things can be used to glorify God. Amen. The question is, am I using those to glorify God? And then also I have up there devotion. I've just got to be really quick with this one. Listen, like, I've got to be completely devoted to God. If I am focused with God, if my ministry is completely focused, I'll give God the undivided attention and respect that He needs. And verse 35 makes that point, but I'm going to skip on past that. I want to quickly go over some tips here that hopefully will help all of us as we kind of go through this whole thing of whether I'm married or whether I'm not, and how can I serve God. First off, to those of us who are single, have you ever felt like sometimes you're up here and you're about to say something that you know like you need to be doing yourself all the time? I feel that way right now. If you are single, you need to thank God for that. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 7, Paul kind of alludes to that point being single or being married is a gift. He mentions the word there. It's a gift. And somehow, no matter how hard it is, even if I want to be married and I'm not, I've got to somehow be thankful to God for that, because there are some blessings in being single. Turn your Bibles, if you will, to Philippians chapter 4. Look at Philippians chapter 4. I realize here that Paul may be talking about some other things, but I don't think it's much of a stretch to put this here. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 11, Paul writes, "Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need." I can do, and Adam makes this point a lot too. This verse probably is taken out of context just as much as any is. "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." So yes, it is difficult to sit here and tell you right now that if you're single, you need to be thanking God for that, because it's hard for me to do. But I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And as a matter of fact, I can learn to be content where I am at. Verse 11 there, right? And so like we think about that, and there are so many blessings with being single, by the way. Like, I can go on a trip whenever I want to, basically. I don't have to check in with somebody. That's nice. Ronnie, you can't do that. You got to check in with Sandy. You're jealous of me now, aren't you? But we think about that. There's something to be said about spontaneity, like, that a single person has that a married person just doesn't. I can be a little bit more flexible. So when somebody calls me, I can pick up the phone and listen for hours on end to them. That's my service, perhaps. I can say yes to coffee. I can say yes to helping people move. I can say yes to visiting the hospital. Like, I've got, as a single person, I've got the power of yes, maybe a lot more than somebody else does. You know, I remember, I hope that you don't get offended by me bringing this up. I was talking to Brother Bill Hensley, though, Jim, and he used to tell me about how whenever you and him would go to, like, a jail ministry or something, y'all would, like, this describes you to a T, how you would be so focused on that, and sometimes Donna would get upset because you'd be gone for hours on end. He had a wife to check in on him. Like, I don't have that, so I, like there's something to be said about time and energy being currency that a single person has that they can use to serve God better. You know, a married person maybe feels like they are stretched too thin. But as a single person, I can be, I don't want to say more selfless necessarily, but I can be more giving of myself. Also, there's so many other things I wanted to say, but the time is getting me. Just quickly, just some tips for people that are not, or for people that are married. I've got to be very careful with this. And tonight I'm going to expand more upon this maybe. But don't pity us. If you are a married person, you want to know how you can help us, don't pity us. And the reason why I got to be careful with that is because, like, in some, like, you do need to be compassionate toward anybody that is suffering through something. I understand that. But don't pity us. Like, don't ask questions like, why are you so picky? Like, why aren't you married? Like, are you still single? Like, that one gets me the most. All right, why? Like, are you still single? Are you going to go up to Adam and ask him, Adam, are you still married? I mean, so like sometimes we ask these things maybe that we shouldn't even like ask, because we don't consider how rude that is. Those kinds of questions and that kind of pity makes it come across as if being single is second rate. Do you think Paul? I think Paul would emphatically disagree with that assessment. Also, don't forget us. Do not forget us. If you are a married person, that's how you can help us. Pray for us, because the devil's after us just like he is you in your marriage. He's after us. Don't forget. You want to know how I know that single people can be forgotten? Let me ask you just a pointed question. How many sermons have you heard on marriage, divorce, and remarriage? And then how many sermons have you heard on being single? I remember where I used to preach, somewhere less than 1,000 miles from here. I was told not to preach on marriage, divorce, and remarriage because, Leo, it's too controversial and people are going to come after you, is what they said. So we are more willing to preach about something that is, quote, more controversial than even preaching about being single. So yes, single people can be forgotten about. It's almost as if sometimes we're just floating around, like we just kind of exist. All right? And whenever we do hear sermons about being single, a lot of times it's couched around, you need to be pure and save yourself till marriage, which is true, but you see, save yourself till there are marriages again. And so, like, understand that oftentimes, and this is not everybody, but let me just ask this in the form of a question so it doesn't come across as accusatory. Are you more apt to invite a couple with you to dinner than you are somebody that's single? I'm about to get a lot of lunch invitations now. But seriously, you know, like, it's, oh, we'll just throw them into a singles group at church and that'll make them feel wonderful. You know, there are some churches that have groups called pairs and spares. You get it? Pairs, because there's, like, a couple is a pair and then, like, I'm just a spare. But you still get to interact with each other. You're not being forgotten. Let me be very pointed about this. I'm going to be like you, John, and be pointed about this. If we have singles in our assemblies that are lonely, that says something about our fellowship and how it's not working. We can get up here, and I've said this. Central is a very warm place and it's very encouraging, but then visitors come here and they just say that they feel it instantly, and that's a great thing. But if we've got singles who are in our assembly that feel lonely because they don't have an immediate family when they are part of God's family, and they feel lonely, that's a problem, folks. That's a problem. And I understand that you're in between a rock and a hard place, just like we are. You know, we're in between a rock and a hard place as single people just because sometimes I just don't want to hang out with you couples. I just don't, because I feel like I'm a fifth wheel. But then if I'm not invited, it's like, well, now they're just abandoning me. I feel neglected or something. And so, like, I'm sure that's hard for you to navigate around that and know how to act. You know, at the end of the day, we can hope so much for a wife or a husband. We can hope for a spouse, but I need to hope in Jesus. You know, a lot of you look at me as if I'm single, and that's not true. My 16-year anniversary is coming up on August the 3rd, and what I mean by that is because, as the church, I am the bride of Christ, and Christ is my groom. And I need to be out telling people about that. That's who I need to hope in. A lot of people think, you know, that spouse is going to meet my unmet needs or something. Jesus meets your needs. Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one has access to God except through Him. That's who we serve. We can all be married in that sense. We can all be alike in that sense. Have you not been baptized? We would love, there are plenty of people here that could help with that, and that you could become part of the bride of Christ and experience all the blessings that are in with that. I hope you understand the plan of salvation. Time has gotten away from me, so I'm not going to go down through that list. But if you have a need, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing the song of encouragement.
Things that are higher, things that are nobler.